sometimes it's easy, sometimes it's not. Well, I was going to, well, guys, this is a special episode. We're live on YouTube. We continue to be live on YouTube. I did get a strike for our last episode, the year in review episode.
Nice.
Which, you know, we all kind of saw coming at some point. But we'll see what happens in the future. I don't know. I'd love to get your guys' take on Facebook and everybody kind of now it's sounding like they want to go in the direction of like not so much censorship, which sounds like
good luck.
Yeah.
That. I inherited this activist post Facebook account that has 470,000 followers, and I've been posting on there, and I'll get like 2 likes or whatever it is on. Nobody sees it. We're siloed. Zuckerberg can go on every platform or every show he wants to and talk about how he's turned over a new leaf or he's a changed android or whatever he is, but I'm not buying any of it. We're still as throttled as ever. Same on X. Elon Musk has restored free speech to the site. Really? When am I going to get some?
Yeah, I think they're censoring whatever they don't like. Well, I think there's like free speech if I agree with you. I was just talking to Ryan Christian about this the other day about like, I feel like if he agrees with you, like he's okay with free speech. And it could be stuff that's not censored. I mean, that is censored on other platforms. So that's why it seems like a free speech thing. Cause it's like, oh, I agree with you. Other platforms might censor this, but because I agree with you, I'll let you post it. But there's still obviously some censorship going on. And to have somebody so obviously have their opinions, their personal opinions, dictate what he's letting be seen and not, it should be just as bad as censorship, because that is censorship.
Yeah.
That's how the show started. Remember? Remember, guys?
100 episodes.
100 episodes ago, it was what? We got together in April of 2020, and I was getting struck down just casually talking about stuff live on YouTube. I got a strike, and then I got another one. And I don't even know what I said. They didn't tell me. And then we got together, and we realized we were all kind of sharing the same stories. We all had the same kind of thing happening to us. We all knew what was going on, but we decided to get together and bitch about it, which we've continued to do for 5 years.
And nothing has gotten fixed. We have gotten
really.
Absolutely nothing accomplished.
Things have got, okay. So Twitter is owned by somebody new in that period of time. Things have gotten probably, I would say, worse. The algorithms that used to promote, like, especially when it comes to my channel, OBDM, when I post up something about UFOs or paranormal on YouTube, that used to get a lot of numbers. Now it doesn't. I'm blacklisted. I'm definitely put in a special category. No matter what I talk about, it doesn't even reach the 10,000 subscribers we have on YouTube. So left to basically toil in podcasting world, which is I guess where I prefer it, down in the muck, down in the gutter,
in the mosh pit of the podcasting world. But you'd think that with UFOs being such a hot topic, that OBDM would be like the number one show, right?
I even play it safe. I play it safe with how I talk about it and what I post to YouTube. And it doesn't matter. I'll talk about, like, they do better numbers than, like, some of our goofier stuff, but not nearly as what they did back in the day when I was talking about missing 411 or things like that. That would easily get 20,000-30,000 hits per show. Now it's lucky if I'm getting 500 per clip, just per clip. And I'm not really doing anything that different. In fact, I'm doing things better, and I'm much more concise in what I talk about when it comes to those clips on YouTube. But it's no doubt that our channel has been blacklisted. It's probably there's a flag on it, which is do not include in algorithm. You have it, Charlie. Ricky has it. Sam has it to probably a certain degree, depending on which channel. He seems to do better sometimes than us, but a lot of us. And if you remember that first, the first major union of the unwanted that we had, oh my God, the panel was packed. We had Luke Rudowski. We had
Ben Swan.
Ben Swan, yeah. Ben Swan.
The conspiracy guys.
Start his own thing. Like the, it was a huge, huge, I would say monumental show. There's never been a show like that before or since with that many people.
It was overwhelming.
It was overwhelming. It was nice to get together and talk about it. And I don't know if we accomplished anything other than we started to network. And I think that has been like the biggest benefit to Union of the Unwanted is the networking, the camaraderie, and friendship in at an age where it's very difficult to make friends. I'm talking my 40s. Very difficult to meet new people and talk about things with people you don't know. That has been the biggest thing for me is like the networking and friendship, things that I wouldn't even have expected has happened. So that's been a net benefit, I think.
I'm surprised how many people know about Union of the Unwanted too. I talk to people all the time who know about it, and I just assume that it's kind of a niche like thing, but apparently I'm wrong.
Is Sam listening to something? Oh, he might be.
He's listening to the show.
Oh, that guy.
I mean, I think you're here, Sam.
I think we heard you, Sam.
He gave up.
He's like, I don't like this. See if the microphone's working.
I don't like this. I'll see you guys in the next 100. Yeah. We heard you. Now we don't hear you.
Now we don't hear you. Stand on one foot.
Here we go.
Oh, we hear you.
I thought this was in an hour. I'm sorry, guys. I thought this was in an hour.
No,
it's Ricky's coaching basketball. You know, he's a good dad. He's out there coaching basketball, maybe roughing up the kids a little bit when the parents aren't watching.
Three.
No, five.
Yay, 100th episode.
100th episode. We're just reflecting on episode one about like, it is funny because I've gone back and like just looked at the guest list and Corbett, Luke from We Are Changed, the conspiracy guys, Ben Swan, dude, I've been trying to think who else was on there. It was like 30 people on there. Well, you know what? You remember back in the day when they used to charge you for text messages? You know, you used to text less. And then when they're free, you text all the time. Well, that's what, you know, emails are free. So I just sent a lot of them out. And, you know, everybody showed up. I think everybody was on the same boat at once. I think they were excited about, like Mike said, like networking and like figuring out like, hey, can we resolve this? What are other people in the community doing to deal with the censorship and whatnot? I think it's gotten a little better. I don't know what interest. Like, it does seem like YouTube. I feel like YouTube would have already kicked off Union of the Unwanted in 2020 if we were live streaming every week or every other week. I feel like they seem... Have you guys seen some of that? Like, it seems like they've kind of throttled down slightly.
I don't have a channel on YouTube anymore. There's just no point. I can't build a foundation of quicksand. I mean, it's like the minute I start to get excited, then it goes away. I mean, I had a YouTube channel and it just kept getting, I would get dinged for stuff that was like, you know, obviously David Icke, you have him on, you're going to get dinged. But Alana Freeland, within 4 hours of me putting up an episode talking about the space fence, like, well, can't talk about that. So it's actually sort of enlightening to see what guests and what topics YouTube despises the most and wants to get rid of the fastest, because I would have thought it would have been, you know, and obviously I did get a strike for David Icke, and I kind of expected that. I knew I was going to, but I didn't with Alana Freeland or Celeste Solem. We're talking about FEMA and like, boom, you just get a strike right there. And it's like, okay, so these are some of the topics that YouTube hates. And these are the people who, if you bring them on, will get you flagged. And we've had this conversation about Del Bigtree before, right? He's a podcast killer accidentally. I mean, not his fault, but you have him on your show and then your podcast doesn't get any reach after that.
Mine got removed from YouTube during COVID. The first time he was on, before COVID, it seemed like it was throttled down a little bit or suppressed. But the second time, people just couldn't find it. I was sharing it and people were like, hey, it's not showing up on iTunes or Spotify or whatever. But you're making a really good point about like the topics that they're dinging you for makes you think those are the most important topics. Those are the ones that we should be digging the deepest, you know, into. And since
I got
then,
in trouble for posting a video. I was watching a video of a woman from Instagram talking about high vibrational actions bringing high vibrational energy, and they dinged me for that. It literally was like, just do good things and good things will happen. And they're like, nope.
Nope.
And I'm like, what? Am I that dangerous? And it does seem that if you were an old school conspiracy theorist, YouTube still hates you. If you're a new school conspiracy theorist, they're willing to work with you. They'll let you get away with a lot more than people who are just pissing them off, let's say around 2015, 2016, which is kind of crazy that we're now 10 years, and they always say it takes about 10 years for you to like flip a country, right? Like a generation. And here we are 10 years later after like Hillary Clinton just completely tried to strong arm her way in and basically destroy the two-party system, the mainstream media, okay? How we look at that, how we get our news, who we trust. I mean, she just destroyed everything. And if you talked about that way back in the day, you know, we know the one thing you can't talk about still on here involving, you know, basements and stuff like that, right?
Connecticut school, still
those things.
Schools and basements, yes.
That get you kind of dinged still, but mm-hmm. that all turned out to be true.
So you can't.
The Connecticut thing will be next, by the way. It eventually will come out, and people will be like, "What are we doing here?"
Dude, yeah, everything is. I get why everybody assumes everything is a psyop, because everything typically is. Just a recent one that I never even heard of, but it was on a Patrick Bet David show with what's his name, Chris Hughes or Chase Hughes or something like that. MK Ultra like expert.
Oh, I'm emailing with him. I'm gonna have him on my show.
Oh, awesome! Yeah. Then I'll definitely, guys, check that out when that comes out. So he talked about Operation Wandering Soul. Have you heard about this?
He's on with Danny Jones too. Recently.
Yeah. Oh, has he been? Yeah. A lot. So us in the conspiracy theory community, like, there's very few projects and operations you haven't heard the name before, and this one was one that I'm like, wait, I've never heard of Wandering Soul. And what happened was that during the Vietnam War, there was they tapped into the radios of the Vietnamese, right? And they have this thing that in their culture that if you don't bury somebody, that their souls still wander. So what the U.S. did was they tapped into the radio frequencies, used ghost sounds, saying, if we surrendered, I'd still be with our families, this and that, and like all these type of things, basically trying to convince the Vietnamese that is the wandering souls of the people who died and weren't buried, and trying to convince them to surrender in that method. It's just like, what haven't they come up with? Like, there's no thing they haven't, you know, exhausted to try to have control and push propaganda. It's surreal.
They did that in Iraq when they were torturing, or maybe they had relocated him to Guantanamo Bay, but one of the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, I think, was they used voice to skull technology and made Allah come to him in his cell and tell him that the best thing for him to do is cooperate, and that the bloodshed needed to end. And the next morning he was fucking singing like a canary.
Yeah,
it certainly seems like that podcasting now is the new way to get disinformation out there. It seems like with all the ex-military guys and then CIA guys appearing on these podcasts, and because I think, you know, that's podcasting and talk radio. That's where conspiracy theories and that kind of culture started, you know, with Art Bell and all that kind of, like, Coast to Coast AM, that moved over to podcasting where you started your own conspiracy podcast. And so it became fertile ground for all these interesting ideas. So it's a little bit more, quote unquote, right wing, I guess, even though the best conspiracy theories are like left wing, but whatever, a flip happened. And now I think the mainstream media is there to brainwash the left leaning crowd. And then the podcast disinformation is to brainwashed the right-leaning crowd, and boom, they got everyone.
Because this is episode 100, and we started, like we said, we started the show because of censorship, because, I mean, it was really like we were, like we said, with networking and trying to figure out a way to survive through what we were all going through as a planet together, the whole COVID hoax and whatnot. 100 episodes later, quite a few years later, do you guys feel like we're like, do you feel hopeful? Do you fear the future? I know the AI thing scares the shit out of me, but there are some things to be hopeful about and some things to fear. Like, where you guys in that thinking, like zooming out and kind of looking forward?
I personally feel like I have to have hope, because I just don't think I would do a show anymore if it was all death and doom and destruction. And, you know, that gets in that argument. Is it just black pilling? You know, you see Whitney Webb discuss that a lot where she goes, okay, get ready for everybody to call me a black pill because I'm putting this out. And I understand what she's saying. I here's what I discover. What I believe is that they basically, right, keep changing what they're trying to attack based on, at the time, what we'll let them talk about, what we'll let them get away with, right? It's like, you know, I just think, like, if they were winning, we would be at war with Iran already. We'd be at war with Russia already. We would be completely and utterly in the digital ID, you know, vaccine passport stuff. And so, I mean, maybe it's inevitable, but at this point, I feel like people are becoming more and more and more paranoid. And I think it's great. I think you should totally be a parent. I love a completely and utterly paranoid population that even questions all of us. Like anything on our show, question it. Do your own research, whatever you got to do. So I'm hopeful, dude. I think Twitter is really great. You can say whatever you want to say about Twitter. I think it's great for giving everybody instant feedback, okay? Like instant feedback. Like you put out an idea, you find real quick if you're getting kicked in the dick. Yeah. And I love that. And it's also to big name people too, like Gavin Newsom or Elon Musk. They hear very quickly everyone's instant thoughts on it, and I love it. I don't think you should be on there all the time because I think you could lose your mind. But I think you got to, like, jump in, throw some elbows, some kicks, and then get out. So I have hope. That's just me.
I'm optimistic about the future, in part because, as Sam said, if we were pessimistic, we'd already have vaccine passports. They would have rolled that out, and that would be a totally different world. The fact that they couldn't get that through, their arrogance was so much that they assumed that we would just, there'd be lines around the block to take these vaccines, and that nobody would push back, and that it would just be full compliance. They really sort of miscalculated on that. There were a lot of people that said no. We made things extremely difficult for them, and that sort of, you know, take your mask, you know, people who walk through grocery stores without a mask back in 2020 would inspire other people that would see that and go, yeah, why am I having this mask on? They would pull it down. So there's a little bit of that that was contagious. And once you start to see some victories, it builds upon itself. But COVID was a failure for them. I mean, I understand that they injected a lot of people, and those people are going to have some real problems going forward. But they didn't get everybody, and they assumed they were going to get everybody. I don't think they anticipated the sort of pushback that the people would have, that people would be questioning their magical vaccines, and that the tone would change, and that, I mean, they can't roll that play out again. They burned it by using it here. So you can talk about monkeypox, and we've seen them failure to launch on a bunch of these new things that were coming out. People just go, no, we're not doing that. We're not interested. Your magic spells don't work anymore. So I'm optimistic about that. And I think that the more people start asking questions, the mainstream media burned all their credibility in the last couple of years, whether it was COVID or Biden or whatever. Oh, he's in great physical shape. And you just look at it and you go, well, I know you're lying to me about this. I know for certain that he's not in good physical shape because I have eyeballs and I can see what's going on. And the fact that you're telling me to not believe my eyes and trust you, you can only do that so long before people just stop tuning in. And I don't know what the numbers are for Fox, but the numbers for MSNBC and CNN after the election, they're down 50% of viewership. Everybody should be looking for new jobs at those places. They tried to sell MSNBC. Nobody wanted to buy it. So this there's so some victories. Crazy.
I don't know if I'm optimistic or not. I don't know. Like maybe, but I'm not. Also, I'm not pessimistic. I like on the OBDM Patreon, I post up old shows for the subscribers. So I'm posting up stuff from like 2000, like early 2012. I'm like, oh, Sky Sounds, that's still happening. UFO Disclosure. Oh, in 2012, I was reading notes like, oh, Dr. Stephen Greer said there's UFO Disclosure right around the corner back in 2012. And he's saying it again right now. So in my world, it seems to be the same crap repackaged a little differently. What's definitely changed is the media landscape and how people communicate with each other and all that stuff, which is fascinating and interesting. I guess I'm cautiously optimistic, but it does seem as though people are falling for the same traps over and over again. And the ad hominem attacks and false equivalency arguments that are often used on social media, those are no longer called out as invalid means of arguing. They just fly. And whereas back in the day, they would be called out. It seems as though the online presence of most people, they're stupider when it comes, and they get drawn into these emotional arguments that doesn't feed anything but the algorithm and probably some bot farming. So I'm not optimistic when it comes to your average user on social media. But overall, as a culture, I think it's nice that I think the American public seems to be a little bit more skeptical, which is good.
I'm kind of on the same boat. I feel like this could go either way. I could see it like going in the good direction where people are waking up at a drastic rate and everything kind of improves for the better because, like we've been saying, the mainstream media loses all credibility. People are sharing information peer to peer with each other, and and that's where you're getting your information from, credible sources that seem like real people. But I can also see it go basically back to where we were in regards to just like everybody kind of thinking that, hey, yeah, we're getting information and finding out that everything is being manipulated still and everything's being controlled still and whatnot. The AI thing scares me too, because I feel like that's another thing that we're probably closer to that being a real issue and something we really have to discuss as a community, as a planet, because there's a AI race right now. Like everybody feels like, hey, I know we shouldn't jump into this too fast, but we don't want the Chinese to have it before we do. We don't want we want to have control of this dangerous thing that we're not sure we understand or how it's going to positively or negatively affect the world. My big thing is like, is it necessary? Like so many of the things that we're developing, it's like, do we need it can do this, it can do that. I'm like, but do we need those things? Like what we want and what we need are completely different things. And if what we want might have horrendous effects on humanity, maybe we should pump the brakes a little bit, right? I mean, I don't know. How do you guys feel about that?
Mike uses AI.
I use it every day.
You use it for good, not evil. Yeah, of course.
I don't know about that, Charlie. I use it primarily for entertainment and my job. And right now I'm having it help me build this very complex piece of like software to automate. I'm automating alerts and responses. So I'm basically trying to make my job easier, but potentially it will be at the sacrifice of a potential future employee. I was tasked to do this and it's making my job go quicker. I don't know if it's making it easier, but it's definitely moving things along pretty quickly. And it's a pretty good programmer. It doesn't get everything, but it's pretty nice. I'm optimistic when it comes to the use of it by humans in creative ways. I mean, there are some really entertaining aspects to it, but at the same time, I'm also reading a book on AI in regards to defense and intelligence. And it is, you're right, Ricky, this is a race to who can control it and what they use it for. So it's like if America doesn't rule the world, then the Russians are going to rule the world. So America has to rule the world in order to maintain our way of life and culture. Same way with AI. If we don't do it, the Chinese are going to do it. So we better do it. It's not like it was all these treaties and agreements. Like, yeah, everyone can be on board with cutting carbon, but if the Chinese don't do it, then it's all for nothing.
Yes. And the Chinese don't do that. They just don't seem to create anything. They need us to create whatever you want to say about America. Fine. Okay. But we do seem to be the innovators and everyone jacks our shit. Right. Yeah. I mean, China, Israel, everyone's just jacking our shit. And so that's interesting. AI to me is interesting. I think people are just going to evolve. But I do think there is a possibility of people becoming less dependent on the internet and people just kind of getting over it. I know I'm 52. I'm older, obviously. But I am over the internet.
What do you mean? You're like, you don't even try to engage with it anymore?
I'm like, so you know, Mike and I do our show. I look for videos. I'm trying to get off of Instagram. I'm trying to, and I really need to get off Twitter, even though I think I'm making a difference. But I do think I need to get off because I'm just battling windmills at this point and.
You're pretty active. You are pretty active. Do you? I mean, I. It's funny because I've been meaning to ask you this because I've during COVID. I'm very good at like Rogan says. Like I post and ghost. I'm like I use it to like kind of just get the word out there. New episode out or maybe here's a good little article. But I ghost. But during COVID, we had too much time on our hands, and it was such a battle to get the information out there that I got. You know, I basically couldn't avoid it. Like emotionally, I got involved in these freaking online debates and, you know, arguments or whatever. And I hated myself for it. I'm like, oh my God, the time I have spent debating this idiot online. And then since obviously COVID, I've been able to just post and ghost again. You don't post and ghost that often. You go at it with people. Charlie does too, actually. But it, you know, but typically you guys are hilarious. So I'm like, are you guys doing it to be like humorous, or are you guys actually getting? Because obviously I'm not keeping up with everything you're tweeting. Or are you actually getting stuck in these debates with this person that you kind of feel like I do, where you're like, dude, I just wasted an hour of my time with some idiot.
Personally, I think we do make a difference. I feel like once you put something into the machine, it spreads. And more people are completely and utterly not buying into these psyops. Things happen. Instantly, everybody pushes back. If you take a look at the Trump assassinations, nobody bought into that. But nobody believed it just went as the FBI wanted you or the Secret Service wanted you to believe. Everyone, at the minimum, thought they allowed it to happen. Then there was a group of people who didn't even believe it. So I'll take either of those as a sign of progress. The Luigi thing, people were kind of like, yeah, dude, the guy's an asshole. I mean, feel bad for his family, but it's, you know, we just have this predator class that doesn't seem to be held accountable for their actions. And, you know, with the blowing up, you know, and the Sean Ryan situation where it's like he's, you know, he's like, I'm putting out this and I'm going into hiding. But yet he's spending time like yelling at people that he's not controlled opposition, which I found absolutely hilarious. But then he's like, you know, he has that chick who looks like a PE teacher on, former CIA person. And she's like, ISIS is here. And if you question 9/11, you're helping the terrorists. And she got hurt. She got curb stomped. And I think that interview did a lot of damage to his brand because people are savvy now. So to answer the question, I like to go like with the fires. I think it's very important to call people out on their bullshit. to go, hey, man, this is a result of you being a single issue voter. You only cared about abortion, or you only cared about like stopping hate, and you were willing to vote in anybody that didn't have an R by their name because you were financially above the fray, where you didn't care about high prices, inflation, crime, homelessness, drug abuse, illegals, false flag, whatever. And now you got it. Now fire and the allowing of this situation to happen in whichever way it was allowed, which we can get into that, but has affected you because you voted for people that told you they weren't going to take away something that was never going to get taken away in the first place.
This is the reason why I bought Activist Post, because the mainstream media is such garbage. And there's so many people that over the last 4 years with COVID and Biden have just said, you know what? I don't trust these people. I don't want my news from them. I still want to know what's going on, but I'm not going to go to CNN or MSNBC or Fox News or BBC or wherever. They have a long track record of lying to me. I'm a free agent for my information. Please give me the information. I'll determine how I feel about it after I read the articles. You don't have to tell me how to think, but just, can I have a place where I'm getting like real stories that aren't written by the CIA? And that's part of the reason why I thought that it was such a perfect time for that there's a huge opportunity here for people that want to go someplace where they can go get some real information, and then they make up their mind about how they feel about things after that. They don't have to be told red team, blue team, we're leaning this way. I mean, if you go to Activist Post, we hate them all, right? We don't like eat any of these teams. That's sort of the baseline. But within that, how do we feel about foreign policy? How do we feel about the empire? How do we feel about crypto? How do we feel about our health, our technology, the creeping technocracy? Well, here's a variety of articles from people who have done extensive research into this. And if you get the information from these people, you're going to be like getting your news from the future. You're going to be so much more informed than everybody else. And so that's part of the reason why, Ricky, you asked why, you know, if we were optimistic. I'm optimistic because I think a lot of people have taken the first step. They are ditching the mainstream media in all of its forms. Print journalism, you know, the LA Times is dead. Washington Post is dead. Nobody reads the New York Times anymore. Nobody goes to MSNBC. Nobody listens to these podcasts. Don Lemon's going to go leave and do his own podcast. Nobody fucking cares. CNN Plus burned $300 million in 3 weeks by trying to launch their paid service. Nobody's interested. These are positive. These are great signs that the narrative control system has broken down. They have nobody to blame but themselves. They've constantly lied to people, and eventually people figured it out and they're no longer interested in it. So, I think that moving forward, if you're getting your information from the right sources, you'll be able to make informed decisions. You won't be voting one item, policies like, oh, I just want to make sure there's no more hate. It's like, no. I need to know more than that. I need to know how, if the public policy is that we've got to have a rainbow flag in our fire station because it's stunning and brave, and that we've got to replace the captain who's been on the job for 30 years with some transgendered one-legged Eskimo midget in order to tick a DEI box. Like, I need to know that because I don't want to live in this place if that's how it's going to run. So, I mean, maybe the fires are going to be the catalyst for the woke left in LA, which, you know, Sammy, I was there for 25 years. I saw how a lot of people are delusional there. They've never thought about this stuff. Well, maybe it's time to start thinking about this, because if you don't, your house might burn down.
The real question is, and I'd love to ask the panel, does this LA fire make an argument for voting matters? At least on a local level.
On a local level, I would have to say yes, that voting does matter at the local level, because they control, you know, the zoning and all that stuff. And I would say it matters more in your immediate life than possibly at the federal level. I mean, in my small little town here, there's a whole bunch of things that I wasn't aware of when it comes to zoning and how things are being built up all of a sudden. We moved out here so because it wasn't built up, because it's farmland, and now all of a sudden it's being built up. Well, it turns out, you know, someone paid off the right people. So I, had I known, I would have voted in a much different way. But, yeah, and now you guys are going to be dealing with that, Sam, now that L.A. is going to be possibly rezoned and different kinds of structures are going to go up in those places that are now burned. It's going to look like a different place.
Dude, and he just totally gets busted every time. So they put out that he's been negotiating with people to rezone areas. And he goes, this is not true. And then right after that video comes out of him going, yeah, we're discussing moving forward how to rezone these things, basically. He's a compulsive liar. And you get what you vote for. And all these rich people who, like, in weird ways are just monkeys who love shiny objects. And they love, you know, it's like what they say, watch out for an attractive fucking progressive, right? They watch out for them because they really have no reason to change the fucking system. They thrive in it. And he's a great example of that. He is a compulsive liar. And now they are already sending out all of their talking heads. You have all these actors trying to blame people, questioning Karen Bass as racist. It's falling on deaf air. When Whitney Cummings is out hunting arsonists, which, by the way, I did that two nights ago. I just got my car and drove around with a bat. Look at the fucking clock, a motherfucker. Okay. That's a sign of things have changed, you know, and I think people are waking up to it. And, you know, just it's just like I get that you care about, you know, your right to choose, but you ignored every other thing that you knew was a problem, which is like, you know, again, the theory of hate to a rich progressive is the ultimate bad guy. It is the worst thing you could possibly imagine, the theory of hate and the possibility of hate over crime, drug abuse, homelessness, inflation, okay? Like, all these things that are plaguing these giant Democratic metropolises. Like, there's now talk that like, and of course, it's all planting seeds, right? They're just planting seeds. But they're talking about Andrew Cuomo for the mayor of New York. Like, they're just
good. You vote for him, you get exactly what you deserve.
Yeah, 100%.
If you vote for him, I don't want to hear any fucking complaining because you know who that guy is. He's shown you who he is. That's exactly what you're going to get. If you think we're going to bring this guy in and he's going to magically fix everything or he's a changed person, you do that at your own peril. If you're dumb enough to keep electing these people in here, I don't want to hear any complaining when it all goes wrong. I can't believe Andrew fucking Cuomo wasn't as great as we thought he was going to be. Really? What part of that did you ever think that? I mean, when he goes on Patrick Bet David show, I'm like, why is this guy on here? Why hasn't he been launched into the Atlantic Ocean by now for all of the shit that he was pulling for you know, years and years on CNN, going on and on and on about that? Or I'm talking about Chris Cuomo, maybe not Andrew Cuomo, but you know what I mean? Whatever.
Well,
same
he's
thing.
An idiot
same
too.
Difference.
Like he just can't stop shooting himself in the foot. And he's just, he like what he said about Joe Rogan's going to lose his place atop of the thing, and Bill Burr will get in the podcasting game, and Stephen A. Smith will get into the podcasting game when they already have podcasts and they've been doing them for a long time. It's just dumb. It's just, I think people are waking up to it. And just like, that's my whole thing. Like, we need to kill political correctness. It needs to die. It just needs to die. It comes with so much fine print. It's just meant to divide us. And I think, and I hope people are waking up to that.
And you know who's actually doing a really good job with political correctness is Piers Morgan, actually. I think he's doing a pretty decent job with getting people from both sides. He's especially the Palestine debate, because he was having people on from both sides and he was agreeing with people from both sides. But every time he would agree with one, the other one would say, oh, see, you're backing them. You know, and it's like they wanted him to pick a team. But he was actually pretty honest with, like, hey, no, you're making a valid point here. But you're also, you know, and it's like he's the last person you would expect to be complimenting in this way, but he is doing it. And even with the Tommy Robinson thing, you know, he's like, hey, you know, the Americans see his, you know, what he's saying about this. Maybe he's right about this, but he's a bad person and that, you know. So it's like being able to see things from all perspectives is super important. And I mean, we got to be skeptical of everybody. And speaking of DeShone Ryan, I don't know if you guys noticed, but remember that there was a clip that was going around of somebody debunking the guy who's on DeShone Ryan. And then he came out and end up apologizing because he was wrong. And it was a perfect example of like, there was,
I saw that guy.
Yeah, the fat intelligence agent who like has Donald Trump syndrome and he's calling everybody a Putin propagandist, that guy.
Yeah, well, I actually put the audio in Pro Tools and zoomed in and heard his mom screaming in the background to keep it down. So I knew he was lying. Well, the thing is, isn't that like the concern to like us in the community who are skeptical of everything? Like, I saw really quickly people were like, he's bullshit. Oh, and look. And then they were sharing that video like, hey, look, this proves it. And I'm like, well, now we're doing the same thing that normies do where they just find something that, you know, defends their worldview and then just leeches onto it, right? And says, this is now the truth. And then next thing you know, it's like, okay, that guy apologized and ended up being wrong or whatever. And that's why, like, especially with current events, I don't know if you guys find yourself doing this, but like, I don't really have a strong opinion on things unless I'm like 100% certain I know, you know, I have a good grip on what's going on. Because so often, it's like people just jump to conclusions. And then as new information comes out, like, you're like, oh, they were completely wrong, you know? And, go ahead, Mike. I was going to.
But so now the DeShone Ryan, like, about the Trump Tower bomber and about the, you know, the Chinese drones and all that stuff. Now the FBI is saying it looks as though it was written by the bomber. So what do you believe at that point? It certainly does funnel and give a lot of fodder to the conspiracy listeners of podcasts, and I guess the more right wing podcast listeners, it feeds right into that. So it does feel like this information, some of it could be true. The best part about this information is like, yeah, there's some fake stuff in there, but there's also true stuff in disinformation. But
I think that they do that on purpose. This is how they discredit people. You know, it says Obama said, you just flood the city square with sewage, right? Awesome. And the first time we saw this was the Damar Hamlin situation, where they had all of us who were anti-vaccine yelling and shouting that he had a heart attack and died. He's not alive. And then sure shit, he comes back alive. And that just made us look bad in front of a people who are desperate not to believe us. And then all of a sudden the Trump assassination happens. And within 10 minutes, we have three different guys who all look exactly alike being named possibly the killer. And then the guy that they kind of went with doesn't really look like the guy that actually they said they killed. So that's going. And so now you got this thing with the DeShone Ryan case, and he gets called out because the squigglies. This doesn't look like an email. This looks like a draft. And it turns out it's him. But then again, we have the FBI telling us that. And so I think that's done on purpose. I think the key is to keep your head on a swivel. I think it's really hard to keep your head on a swivel.
It could be that
the
letter is written by the actual guy. But the actual guy was based at Fort Bragg, which is where the Army PSYOP operation is happening. So, like, what are we talking about? I mean, you saw the video from in 2022, Ghosts in the Machine, that was put out by the 4th PSYOP Division of the U.S. Army. We're everywhere. All the world is a stage. I've got a macroaggressions episode coming out in 2 days about it. I mean, they're all at that base running PSYOPs. That's where the Army Psychological Operation Division is. And all these guys come out of the same place. So excuse me if I have questions about the veracity of this information, given that it is coming from a group who told us in 2022, get ready, we're operational, we're going to be controlling the narrative. And if you want to join us, at the end of the video, is their domain address.
their website, goarmysof.com.
And you know, the Obama getting, you know, either was he repealing it or extending the Smith-Muntz Act, whatever that.
He changed it. Smith-Muntz Modernization Act.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
legalized propaganda.
And making it legal to propagandize us. And that's why nobody knows if they're coming or going. But I think people are getting savvier and savvier. Once you start understanding the playbook, these people aren't smart. They're just psychopaths willing to do whatever they have to do, which is kill a bunch of people to get what they want.
The problem is that the average person thinks that when you tell a lie, it's all has to be a lie. And they haven't figured out that you, no. As you said, the best sort of disinformation is 90% truth and 10% bullshit. And you don't know where that bullshit is. It's just enough. You can get the names, places, all this can be accurate, but it could be like, you know, Chinese spy drones,
whatever. Yeah.
But maybe all the thing that changes is from Israeli to Chinese or Russian to Chinese or Iranian to Chinese or American, more than likely American to Chinese. So all you have to do is change one piece of information, and then somebody who's not qualified or doesn't have the experience at going through, you know, digging through all these operations, they go, well, all this stuff is true. It's like, well, almost all of it's true. All you have to do is change one little bit, change one person's name, or, you know, put it from this country to that country, and the entire narrative shifts. And you can get people caught in these traps especially if they're ideologically aligned with it. Trump or Biden or whoever, you know, or fuck yeah, America, man, America never does anything wrong. You know, we're the greatest country in the world. It's like, well, if you do that, you have big blind spots for when America does do a bunch of shit wrong. You're unable to see it because you've decided already that America is above reproach and that we can't question any of these things. And that is just, this is, you know, the average person out there is going to work and going to the grocery store and coming home and trying to just make it. They're not professionals at going through documents and figuring out what's right and what's wrong. And they don't have the background to understand that the Smith-Muntz Modernization Act legalized propaganda to be used against them. So in their minds, they don't use propaganda on us. It's like, oh yes, they do. And they legalized it. And there's a bunch of other shit that's legal too, that you probably didn't know. So again, it's like, it's hard for the average person out there who doesn't have this background to know what they're up against. They don't know the limitations or the capacities of these intelligence agencies and what they can and can't control. It's never even crossed their mind what a false flag is or something like that. But once you explain it to them, it's like, oh my God, it's almost overwhelming. So, you know, you've got a lot of people that are still going to fall in the traps and step on the rakes and wind up in some Q related like cult where they're waiting for John F. Kennedy Jr. to come back to life or whatever. You know, I mean,
yeah, this is where you got to be able to admit when you were wrong. Like, listen, they find interest that pique my curiosity, like UFOs and stuff like that. I'll talk about it. It's like, oh my God, it's a disclosure is coming. I'll talk about it because I like those topics and maybe I'm promoting a bunch of BS. That's possible. But I'm also willing to admit when I'm wrong, when I've made some sort of statement that's completely off base, or if my co-host called me out for being a dipshit, I'm okay with that. You got to be able to say, listen, that was wrong. That was a bad path that we went down. I should have been a little bit more wise and talking about that in a certain way. But a lot of people, they just double down on the bullshit. And you don't grow that way. You don't learn anything that way by doubling down on the continual wrong moves over and over again. And you got to take a lot of this stuff with a grain of salt. It's not about the destination, the truth, because you're really not going to get that. You got to be comfortable with the journey and hopefully the experiences you have along the way of learning all these different things, and maybe it enriches your life. Probably won't.
Well, it's also that, you know, 80% of the people are incapable of questioning authority. They're just not, they can't do it. We're mammals. We want leaders. They want to trust their leaders, and their leaders are psychopaths, are positioned to completely murk them And that's why it's like, for me, it's like, you know, I don't trust anybody. Therefore, it's like I can question everybody. I keep my head on a swivel. I go, hey, this is how I feel. I could be wrong. And I actually love it when I am wrong, because I'd be like, look, I admit it, I'm wrong. You know what I'm saying? It's kind of like when you're you're an alcoholic and you get sober. You love to make amends to people because it means you're growing. So most of these people just want to live. So when I started doing the conspiracy thing, you know, in terms of podcasting, I was always a conspiracy theorist. My father raised me to be very paranoid. At the time, it's like a great power you have and you don't know how to use it right. So it could cause you a lot of trouble at first. But I always questioned everything. And then as I got older, you know, obviously I started the podcast, started being very vocal about things I saw, and people got really, really angry with me. They got really, really angry with me. And I started to see patterns on who would get angry with me. And it was like, you could break it down to a couple types of people. One would be people who really want to believe they have a great bullshit meter, and they just can't accept that they got fooled. Like their ego, like, just will not allow them to admit they got played. The other ones are people who brought kids in the world. They don't want to believe what they're bringing, what they brought their kids into, or that there's monsters out there that would hurt their kids. They don't want to believe in any of that. Like, we, you know, it's like a big issue I had with Brian Callen a very long time ago when we did our show together was like, Brian was okay with acceptable bad guys. Like, if you told Brian, you know, Russia, Muslims, you know, Catholic, you know, these paradigms in which we're just traumatized in and brainwashed in to believing, he had no problems with that. But once you flipped it to people on the same level in the same thing, like, hey, dude, maybe it's not Middle Easterns. Could it be Zionists? He couldn't comprehend it. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's not Russians. Maybe it's America. Can't comprehend it, right? Maybe it's not Catholic priests. Maybe it's rabbis. They, you know, and you're just going, like, my whole thing with this is, like, I'm not asking for the focus on any one group. I'm asking for, you know, everybody to be treated equally. So they can't come to grips with that. They can't come to grips with maybe their job feeds off this system of death and destruction, and that they are a cog in that machine. And if they start to question it, they will lose their place in that machine. So they don't even want to know that. So those are the kind of the people that I've noticed that were really pushed back against me, was that people who just couldn't come to grips with certain things.
I think it is that evil thing where, you know, it's one of those things where once you understand that there's no lengths they won't go to for control, then everything becomes plausible, right? And I think some people haven't reached that point where they're like, okay, I've uncovered this. That seemed too crazy to believe. I uncover that. Now I'm at the point where, like, nothing is out of the realm of possibility. And they also have to understand everything is psychological warfare. I mean, think about the Department of Defense. It was called the Department of War. They changed it because they wanted to change your perception on what they did or what they do, you know, and it was Edward Bernays who I believe even suggested it. Everything is psychological. They, you know, there's a great older documentary called The Corporation, which is all about how corporations use different colors, sounds, and all. It really gets into the details. A Canadian documentary, I had somebody on years ago to discuss, and it was a part of it. And it just, like, all the money that goes into psychological warfare to get your subconscious, all these desires, all these wants, all these primitive tactics to tap into primitive nature to get you to want something or like something or not stop eating that thing. You know, I believe the Dorito Effect is a book of the same kind of topic, where it's like, how do they get all these artificial colors and textures, and everything is well thought out. Nothing is accidental. They have psychologists and scientists all trying to figure out how to trick your brain into wanting more of this thing. And there's a more recent documentary, I believe it's called Buy Now, the Buy Now Conspiracy or something like that. It's on Netflix, and it's not, you know, it's good for a normie, but it goes into how, like, Amazon will have a little message, and they'll, because they have so much traffic, they can try that little message in 20 different colors and see which one has better feedback. Use this type of text, use this type of this, that type of that. And they'll just testing and tuning. And they have so much traffic that they can quickly figure out like, oh, this will get people to click on this faster, or this will get people to buy this faster. So it's like there is psychological warfare going on all the time. And this stuff has been, I mean, even the idea, and I just recently had a guy, Candace Owens brings him up quite a bit. At least his book called The Assault on Truth. And it was by Jeffrey Mason. And he worked at the Sigmund Freud archives, and he was friends with Anna Freud. Okay. His daughter, Sigmund's daughter. And he found these unpublished books or writings, a study. It's about the seduction theory and about how the elite were actually abusing their children. And he was getting all these kids that are coming in and they're talking about abuse and whatnot. But Sigmund Freud's like, this is going to ruin my career. The elite, the people in the hierarchy are my friends or my community. I have to disguise this as just psychological trauma, that it's a illusion. So he completely comes up with this bullshit theory about how it's all in their head. And then years later, Jeffrey Mason finds out that that he had these unpublished papers that he knew what was going on, that it was physical, it wasn't all mental, but they were trying to protect the elite. So, and then you look at it, and we're talking about this when I had him on my show. We talked about how like it's become they've brainwashed us into believe that all the pedo stuff that happens in trailer parks with people wearing wife beaters, drinking, 40 ounces of King Cobras. It happens in hillbilly parts of the country. It's always the lower class, right? It's the lower class. It's the people who are in dysfunctional families with a stepdad that, whatever. Like, and the whole time, the majority of it's happening in the upper classes, in the elite, And so again, this is how you get people like Brian Callen or whoever, somebody who has such a difficult time to break the mold, because it's years and years and years of psychological warfare. And now, for whatever reason, the four of us, and we probably all have individual, separate, and different journeys on how we broke that mold, but some people just haven't got there yet. And that's also why I give people a little bit of wiggle room when people are like, oh, he used to say this, if it's a somebody who, they call it now the new alternative, media, mainstream media or whatever, the Tucker Carlson's, the whatever. And people are like, oh, he used to do that. And I'm like, I get it. But I'm like, everybody's on their journey. And at one point we were them previously, so it's like everybody's on their journey. You never know when they're going to see the light, for the lack of a better term. But I give them a little bit of wiggle room, because I'm like, okay, maybe it could be a psyop. Maybe it could be, controlled opposition. Or maybe it's somebody who, because of their life journeys and their life experiences and because of the COVID thing and all these things that we experienced together, maybe they finally broke through the mold,
Well, maybe. Yeah. But on that note, I gotta go back to work, guys.
Oh, yeah, dude. I thought this was going to go at 3. I had to rearrange my stuff.
All right, let's wrap it up.
Guys, 100 episodes is huge. Most shows don't even go 5 episodes. But here we are at 100 episodes.
I think 7 is the average.
The time changes made it a little harder for me. I have to move some stuff around, but I'll be back. And I think this is some of the best discussions on the internet. And I think, you guys do a really great job. I'm honored to be a part of it. I love jumping on when I can. And I love being a part of the Union of the Unwanted. And I feel like after this show started, you started seeing more people do their own version of it, which I love. More the merrier. More people doing it means less chances of censoring everything. So Ricky, Charlie, Midnight Mike, it's an honor to go to war with you guys all the time and battling the forces of evil. You guys are really great. Dedicate each one of your guys' shows great, and I appreciate you guys, and it's an honor to call you guys friends.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, and plug Doom Scrolling. You guys have been killing it with Doom Scrolling, new project.
Listen, I don't know what these numbers of views are, So I just take it, whatever. That, like, I've been so fucked on views on YouTube that I just take whatever. No, I go, that's the number. And it's doing really great. It's a fun show. And hopefully it'll keep growing. And, you know, I did it before. And then Midnight was like, hey, I'd love to do it with you. I thought it was a great idea. And he's crushing it. He's made it 1,000 times better. And it makes my life easier. And I appreciate doing a show with him. And it's just fun ADD theater. So, yeah, check it out. Whenever we can do it, we try to do it every Thursday. Sometimes it's on the road. But, yeah, Midnight Mike's great.
And where can people find
I learned
that?
A lot.
Where can people find
coming
that?
To Denver for a comedy. For stand-up
I'm
comedy.
Working on it, dude. There's a big club there called the Comedy Works, and I've been trying to hold out to get there because everybody says it's the best club out there, but sometimes you got to go where you want it. Nothing, you know, I'd love to play the club, but I haven't heard back from them. So I'm going to try to find a place and do my own show out there.
Okay. We'd love to see you out here.
I would love to see you too, buddy. I'd love to see all you guys.
Yeah, guys, where do you stream Doom Scrolling? I see it on Twitter and YouTube. I don't know whose channel it is at.
It's on Sam's.
It's on Sam's, okay.
Yeah, we do YouTube, Rumble, Twitter. We do Rockfin as well. And, yeah, I mean, I would love to do it on BitChute. I just got to figure out. BitChute's a dangerous place, bro. That comment section. Dude, it gets Mad Max real quick, right? But I'm in, dude. But right now, yeah, those are the big three. And, you know, like, I really do feel like if you're not live streaming on Twitter right now, regardless of what you think of Elon Musk, you know, and you know, I know there's been a lot of dust up with Musk, and I'll wrap it up here because I know we gotta go, but you know, I would take what Musk is doing right now and use it to my advantage. I'm not surprised by some of the censorship that's going on. I don't think it's right. I'm just not surprised by it. As somebody who's been censored everywhere, I know what's coming, so you gotta kind of play this game. And it's done miracles for me. Some of my tweets get over 100,000 views. I usually get at least one a week. That never happens to me before this. So, and even YouTube now is starting to give me love. So we'll see what happens. I'm gonna be honest with you. Outside doom scrolling, I don't put any conspiracy stuff on YouTube. I send to the places that people like it: Twitter, Rumble, BitChute, Substack. I put it on the places that want it, and I keep it off YouTube.
OBDM?
Yeah, OBDMpod.com.
Best podcast out there.
And you're live streaming still on Saturdays and Wednesdays?
Wednesdays, yeah. Wednesdays, you know, Twitter, Rumble. But it's a podcast, really. Just, you know, download the audio and listen to it. That's what's important, really.
On January 1st, I became the new owner of Activist Post and Natural Blaze. Activist Post has been in existence for 15 years. It was one of the Disinformation 200 websites back in 2016, along with Free Thought Project and Zero Hedge and WikiLeaks that were banned by everybody and demonetized and throttled and all that stuff. I see that as a benefit, not as a detriment. I've been getting my news from Activist Post for a long time. I was flattered when they reached out to me and asked if I would want to carry the torch moving forward. And I said, yes. There's a great place down in the home section of Activist Post called Favorite Podcasts. And if you go down there, all of our shows are there. There's a daily section, a comedy section, a deep dive section, and health. So if you're interested in adding new podcasts to your buffet, go take a look at activistpost.com. Go down to the bottom for the favorite podcast and see what you think. It's available for everyone. And Macroaggressions just had its 500th episode a couple of weeks ago. So that's, you know, goddamn, man, 5 years of doing this. I just would have never imagined it would turn out like this. It's been the best thing I've ever done. So thanks everybody for being a part of that. Ricky?
I think we're all in the club 500 now, right? Sam, well, you got to be up there, right?
Mike's
you're way
where
up
are
there.
2,000?
You? 848.
Damn.
He's close. So close.
Yeah, our goal is 1,000. We'll see what so happens. Close. Then.
That is wild.
Burn the studio down at 1,000. Walk out. Retire.
Goodbye. Go live on a farm.
No, actually, don't burn the studio. It's the Wise Wolf studio. I just had Tony Arterburn on.
We love him.
Maybe don't burn the studio down. Yeah, actually, you know what? Everything's burning in LA already. Let's, maybe don't do that.
So crazy.
The Ripple Effect Podcast.com, the YoungDon'tWantIt.com. You can find all our links. I'll have Charlie, Sam's, Mike's, all the links are there at theunionofdeadwants.com. Please support their work. They're OGs in the community, and I can't thank you guys enough for going on this crazy journey with us. Hopefully another 100.
All right. Take it easy, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Everybody.
Take care.
Bye, guys. I love you.
You did a great job.